Welcome to the Prison and Sober podcast with your hosts, Sam Goldfinch and Ellie Crow. If you want to make your life bigger, not smaller, then this is the podcast for you. If you can sense that you're destined for more and you're curious about how drinking could be holding you back, listen in and come on this journey with us. Through the interplay of mind and body practices, we will help you elevate your daily life and discover the wonder and potential of going alcohol free. Let's make life bigger together. Hey friends. Okay, this week we've got our good friend Tony Will with us to talk about the six pillars of sobriety. And that's all I'm going to say. This is a really cool conversation. And also, just a plug for two things. One, please, please, please come and hit subscribe on the Present and Sober YouTube channel. We're making an effort to grow it and to get the word out to more people. And we're putting these videos out there. So we'd love your support over there. And I would also love your support on the Rebel Spirituality YouTube channel too. I'm putting 6, 7, 8 minute podcasts out each week. Just a waffle from me, something that hopefully you can carry with you during the week to kind of reflect on, that's going to make a real difference to your life. So the combination of those two things, I mean, come on, that's an amazing thing, right? So if you could take a minute today just to go and hit the subscribe button on those channels, me and Ellie would be infinitely grateful. All right, team, without further ado, I'll hand you over to me, Tony, and Ellie. See you there. Oh, hey team, this is incredibly exciting. We've got Tony Will with us here to talk about all sorts of different things. But hey, Tony, it's good to have you here, mate.
Hi, guys. It's so good to be here. This is my first podcast with you individuals over the pond. How cool is this?
Oh, well, I love it. Well, we're really pleased that this is, that you came here first. That's super cool. Yeah. Tony, we've got so many cool things to talk about. Just to give people a quick overview, we trained together, didn't we? And did we say it was 2020 or 2021?
I think 2021. Yeah.
So we trained together for this Naked Mind coaching certificate then. And I remember being fascinated by what you were up to then, because you've been working in pro hockey but also, you know, obviously had this story with alcohol and stuff like that. So just so I'm going to make sure I get this right. You are currently the general manager for the men's AA pro hockey team for the Kalamazoo Winx. Did I get it right?
You nailed it. It's a good job you wrote that down, mate.
Well, I love it. It's so cool. So you're smashing it professionally. And you know, I know we just spent some time together the other week in Tampa just catching up. And that's, you know, why we've said to come on the show. So that's amazing. But where to start, mate? We'd love to hear a bit about you and your story and then tell us loads of cool stuff. So go for it.
Sure. Yeah. So my drinking journey began well before my alcohol career. I would say, though, I was kind of a late bloomer when it came to drinking. I wasn't, you know, I was one of those late 20s drinkers. I started a family. I got married young, youngish, and then I had two kids and went to college and got my degree and did all that. But I would call that, like, I took the kind of traditional track, right? Like, my first husband, and this is part of my, there's some good little tea that I'm gonna spill today. I've been married more than once, so three times to be exact, but I got it right the third time. But my first husband and I met in college, and we, you know, got our jobs and started a family, and both raised very Catholic, and brother-in-law was a Catholic priest. He married us. He baptized our kids. So I'm painting this picture because then Tony, decided after about 7 years of that, I wasn't happy. And it wasn't like any big earth-shattering reason. I just wasn't. I was 29 years old. There was a lot inside me. I wanted more. And but choosing to get divorced at that, with that type of family dynamics, and it was hard, right? So a key theme in my story is like courage, but mashed with shame. And so I was courageous enough to walk away from the marriage. And in hindsight, actually, it proved for a lot of reasons to be the right decision. But I didn't know how to cope, right? And it took me years to figure this out. From 29, when I walked away from the marriage, my kids were 4 and 1 at the time. I think I was 42 or 43 when I finally figured out. That was the moment my drinking moved from social to coping, and that pain of the divorce. And I remember being why did it take me so long to figure that out? And for me, that was important. I needed to understand when that moment was, or that time frame in my life. So yeah, my drinking, I moved into my 30s, and I had my children part-time. For our custody arrangement. And so I was working hard in my job at the time. I was working in retail banking. I was managing branches for banks and in leadership roles there. And it became this, and as a hobby, I was doing like endurance sports, like running marathons and doing triathlons and slowly climbing my way up to accomplishing full Ironman a couple times in my late 30s. And but it was a work hard, play hard mentality. And so, man, I was working hard at work. I was working hard on my endurance sports. And then, boy, would I play hard. And it was like drinking each evening, thinking I was sophisticated and watching The Real Housewives of whatever. And,
Oh, you just got me right in the heart.
yeah. I moved from bottles to boxes over that time period with my wine. And then it would move, and then binge drinking like on the weekends, right? And then over the course of my 30s, I would start to have blackouts, and it was scary, right? And I'd want to stop, like, boy, I need to take some time off. I started to do the, well, I'll have water in between each glass of wine, or I tried the infamous, I won't drink red wine, I will move to white wine. Right, like, oh, that's going to work, Tony. Or I just won't drink wine. I will drink beer, or I will just drink spirits. I mean, just all the weird deals I made with myself. And so, but at the time, they didn't seem weird. They were very like genuine. Somewhere along my 30s, I think I was 38, I ended up getting into trouble with the law. And it was, oh, talk about shame. And I wasn't, so I was at a hotel bar and I had come down there already highly intoxicated. And I was belligerent, I guess. I don't remember a lot of it. And they tried to kick me out. And I said, well, then why don't you arrest me? I escalated it from like 0 to 1,000. And so they did. And at the time, my second husband was a police officer
Oh,
or is a
gosh.
police officer. Yeah. And so, but he wasn't working. I mean, we weren't in Kalamazoo. We were further north in Michigan. And that was a big moment for me. Because at that point, when I woke up in a jail cell, I was like, okay, you clearly have a problem with alcohol. And so from there, I went and got right away, I was like, I'm getting an AA. Because that's the only thing I knew. This was like 2016, right? So the only thing we knew was like, okay, I go to AA and I went and got evaluated at an inpatient or outpatient program. I joined in the States. It's called IOP. I can't remember the outpatient recovery. I did that and 15 months I didn't drink and through AA. And there were some good things about AA, right? Like the connection was great. The methodology, not so much, right? It stops at the behavior. It's very, it's built on a 100-year-old philosophy. It's very man-centric, all these things. And so I was like, I started to have thoughts about a year in, this is a cult, this is a cult. And I started to believe those thoughts. So I thought, I think after 15 months, like 15 months on the dot, I'm like, I think I can handle drinking again. I went 15 months. I should be able to moderate, right? Wrong. And so I went out for 3 more years. And it was a series of highs and lows. In the middle of that 3 years, I got divorced a second time. And that was, I didn't want to do it. I was turning 40. I seem to do this every decade, by the way, you guys. This is a pattern with me. So watch out when I turn 50. I do. I told Josh, my husband, he knows. No, but I was like, wow, I'm turning 40. I'm getting divorced. And we didn't have children together or anything. But it was 11 years of my life we were together. And I thought, well, if I remove him, husband number two, the alcohol will just decrease magically. And you know what? That didn't happen because I can't outrun me, right? And so I ended up, this is a very long answer to your short question. I ended up starting to date and I was like, I'm not getting remarried. I just don't want to. Like, who wants to be married 3 times by the time they're 40? Well, I get on Tinder. Do you guys have Tinder over in the UK?
I've not been on it myself, though.
Okay, Ellie, we should talk because I got on Tinder and I'm like, I upgraded it. So, okay, if you ever get on there, upgrade it, because then you don't have to waste your time on everyone. You can know who already swiped right on you, and then you can decide if you want to. So I upgraded mine. It was worth the money. So I see Josh on there, my now husband, and I'm like, he's still single. I met him professionally years ago, and I'm like, he's still single. There must be something wrong with him. This is perfect. This is perfect. Because he does not want to settle down and he's on Tinder. I mean, this is going to be like awesome. And then we ended up getting engaged 11 months later. And we were married like 6 months after that. And in all of that, I was still drinking. And then about, I don't know how long we'd been married, not long, 4 months or so, I went on a girls' trip. And I'm sitting around the campfire. This is what we do in northern Michigan. We go up north and we sit around the fire and we drink and we go to wineries and we wear puffy vests and drink coffee to feel better about ourselves in the morning and all this shit. And I'm sitting around the fire and I'm like, why do I keep doing this? Why am I the drunkest person here? Why am I so successful in my professional career but cannot get my arms wrapped around alcohol? Why can't I have it all? And that was my governing belief, that I wanted to have it all. And so I walked out of that weekend very hungover. I texted Josh and I was like, I'm going to take a break. And I kept this text thread because it was so powerful. And he replied to me and he said, is this one of those Tony breaks where you say you're going to take a break, but you really don't? And he meant it with love. It wasn't. And I said, no, I really am. I'm going to take 30 days off. And he said, hey, I support you in anything you want to do. So I got home and I'm doing my 30 days by myself and I'm fucking miserable and I'm sad and this is 20 October 2020. And so we're in the thick of the pandemic, right? And the hockey team, which I know we'll eventually get to, we're dark that season because of the pandemic and the different rules in Michigan. And so we didn't play. And so I just was like, I'm gonna figure this out. And so I Googled, I'm like, there's gotta be something different than AA. And this will run into my leadership pillars too. There's gotta be something else out there, some other expert out there. And I found this Naked Mind. And I bought the Annie's This Naked Mind book. I bought the Live Alcohol Experiment book and I read it. And then I did more Google because that's where you find out everything is Google, right? You find out if you're an alcoholic on Google, you find out if
Yeah, every quiz ever invented is on there.
whatever ailment I have, it's Dr. Google. You go to Google, and they were doing a live alcohol experiment in November of 20, and I'm like, $47. This is awesome. So I joined that, and I started with my 30 days. I lengthened 21 more days after that, and then I said, I think I'm done. And but I still don't say forever because I'm a rebel, and if I say forever, then I'm immediately going to break that rule. Right. Because I love to just self-sabotage all over myself. And so here I am 3.5 years later. And a lot's happened, of course, in that 3.5 years. But one more fun thing, and then I'll breathe and drink some coffee here in a minute. But November of 2020, I did the live alcohol experiment. November of 20, no, wait, that, yeah, November of 2021, I was coaching in a live alcohol experiment.
Cool. Yeah. Well,
So cool.
it is. It's really cool. And funnily enough, so I trained with Annie. I started in the March of 2020. So I've done the January. Tw hang on, the January 2020 live alcohol experiment was the one that I've gone into. $47. Fucking hell. And then like best $47 I'd spent. Then trained with Annie. And then I threw my hat in the ring to coach the live alcohol experiment, and I was rostered up. I was called up for the November 20, so I should have been coaching your alcohol experiment, but I wanted to coach my home group. I wanted to coach the January one, so I'd said to Scott at the time, "Thanks for the slot. Can you just put me on hold because I want to do January?" Yeah, no problem. And so I coached January because it's that, like, you want to pay it back, right? It's such a powerful, well, experiment. It's an incredible, because there's no pressure in there, and you find a bunch of people that are just like you. And so, if anybody's not gone through the alcohol experiment, you want to give it a go, irrespective of where you are with booze, because it is just such a phenomenal program for $47. It's wild.
It's wild. And you know, the community is the best part, similar to AA, the community part, right? And the coaches are phenomenal. I mentored a lot in the group. Like I believed firmly, I'm a big fan, and for me, of servant leadership. And so I donate my time in a lot of places. And I did that in a lot of these groups that I wasn't even coaching in, because I actually have a notes page in my phone, AF advice, and I would copy and paste, because you find that it's a lot of the same. We have a lot of the same struggles, right? Like I used to think I'm the only one that fill in the blank. And the fact of the matter is, a lot of us have, we're all doing the same things. And so it felt like coming home. It really felt like coming home in the alcohol experiment, in the coaching certification, then everything since then, it felt like coming home. And I'm just like, oh, I'm meant to be here. It's
Yeah,
really
it's
cool.
very cool. And so that pillar that you mentioned, so we'd love to weave that through, there's so many places that we're going to visit in this conversation. That first pillar, so this is about finding an expert, right?
Yes, go to the experts is number one. And so when I and I'll pivot and I'll weave it all together, because as Sam beautifully introed me with the men's double A professional hockey is my day job. So I am the general manager, which means I'm responsible for all business operations for the hockey club. So sales, marketing, community relations, public relations, broadcasting, game operations, creative production, and mascot. And let me tell you, that could be a whole other podcast on managing and hiring mascots.
Yeah,
But
is that the guy that dresses up in the big suit?
yep. And there's a whole community out there.
It's a big deal, right? It's a big deal.
It's a very big deal, and it is. You want to meet some quirky people? So I'm responsible for all those areas of the franchise, and those departments report up to me. And so I was hired in what month was 2015, I think. And I'm born and raised in Kalamazoo. I get a phone call one day that says, "Tony, we'd like you to come to run the K-Wings." And I said, "The hockey team?" And they said, "Yeah." And I said, "They're still around?" Because I would go to some games as a kid, and they were like, "Well, that's the problem. And that's why we're wondering if you'd be interested in coming here." And I said, "I don't know shit about hockey." And literally, that's what I said to the HR person. And she laughed, and she's like, "That's okay. We don't want someone that knows about hockey. You can learn that." She's like, "We want someone that knows how to build teams, not a hockey team, like a business sales team. We want someone that knows the community and knows how to sell." And I'm like, well, I guess I'm all those things. And I love Kalamazoo. And so I said yes. I took a 35% pay cut from where I
Wow.
was at. 35%. But here's the thing. One of my core beliefs is I don't do stuff for money. Money does not motivate me. If I'm passionate about something, the money follows, right?
Correct.
Because, right. And so I'm mission over money all day long, regardless of what experts will say. That's just how I'm hardwired. And it's always worked for me. And so I said yes, took my 35% pay cut. It's been the best job I never knew I wanted, but I didn't know how to run a freaking hockey team. So this is where the leadership pillars were born. And so I was like, okay, what do I do? So there's 28 teams in the ECHL. That's the league we're in. And so I was like, and they're all over the US and Canada. So I said, well, I'll just start visiting these teams. And I'll go meet with the Tonys of the different teams. And I started with our division, so in the Midwest, and I went and I learned from those experts. And so that was leadership pillar number one. And I went to Cincinnati, Ohio. I went to Indianapolis, Indiana. I went to Brampton in Toronto. I just started to go, and I took pieces and parts of each, and I said, okay, I'm going to innovate, which is leadership pillar number two, and make this work in Kalamazoo. And so that's where it started on the business side. And so as I grew in my own wisdom, I started to apply that in my journey with alcohol. So go to the experts, like, okay, there's got to be different methodology out there. That's changed so much in the last 8 years. So yeah, those are my first two leadership pillars. Go to the experts and innovate.
Wow.
And there's four more after that.
That's cool. I can't wait to hear them. There's something, the thing is, when you boil the best things down, they often just seem so outrageously simple from a bird's eye view. But Boy, do we overcomplicate stuff, right?
Oh God. So and like love to overthink things and like, you know, turn it over in our heads over and over and over again. Yeah, and it is because when I was like, how did I do this? And it is, it's like it's simple stuff, but it's learning to apply it over and over and over and over again, right? So it becomes natural. And that's why I think we're where we get hung up sometimes is we just don't. I see a lot of my clients where they want to do these things. It's just A, they don't know where to start, and B, it's hard to execute, like the get going.
I think it's also humbling to start to sort of stand at the bottom of a mountain and say, golly. And I love that. I'm someone who every few months or every few years loves to put myself at the bottom of another mountain, you know, either literally or metaphorically, usually metaphorically, right? But I think it's a wonderful way to learn, and we learn a huge amount from that. And you know, that whole thing of like, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. You know, it's true, right? It's great to hang around with people who know shit. It's cool.
Oh, and I love that analogy, Sam, because I describe it. People ask me, like, why do you, how have you been able to accomplish what you have? Whether it's completing an Ironman or running a men's hockey team or choosing not to drink or whatever, I love to put myself at the bottom of a mountain. I always say I just love challenges, but I like that analogy better. So I'm going to innovate from your.
Yours. I don't know. I'm sure I nicked it from someone. So,
I went to an expert, you, and now I will innovate.
I've got to go study with the expert business.
there's plenty of things I'm not an expert in, but yeah. Oh, so hey, so I don't know, Ellie, is there anything you're burning to ask? I mean, I'd love to know a few more of these pillars, but is there anything front of mind?
Yeah, that's kind of where my head is going. Like, what were the rest of the pillars? And then at what point did you realize that you had something in terms of the pillars? Because presumably there's like you're just getting shit done. And at what point do you realize that you've got a framework?
Yeah, well, I don't think I realized I had a framework for probably 3 years into my job, into this job. And mind you, this whole time I'm doing this, I'm drinking. And I'm not saying like I'm not drinking at work. Like that wasn't my thing. And if people do drink at work, hey, no judgment. Listen, I get it. But that wasn't my jam. Although because I worked in pro sports, I could, right? So and that's it could be very confusing. So leadership pillar number three, I about 2 to 3 years in, I realized that I was a minority. And I know that sounds kind of counterintuitive, but I also serve, and this will paint a better picture. So leagues, sporting leagues are governed by a board, like a board of directors, but they call us governors. And so I'm a governor for the Kalamazoo Wings. And I would go to these board meetings, and there's each team gets two governors, one regular governor and then one alternate. So if something happens to me, then my alternate governor can step in. And so I would go to these board meetings. There'd be 60 plus people in these board meetings. And I sat at the table and I'm like, I looked around and I'm like, holy shit. I'm the one of, there was like three women. And I'm like, we got some work to do here. And then that little nugget was born in me. And I've been working tirelessly for the last at least 6 years, maybe seven, on diversity, equity, inclusion in the space of not just gender, right? But it was awoken in me from sitting in that room. Because people think I like kicked down the door in 2015 with my bra on fire in Kalamazoo and said, I am woman, hear me roar. I'm going, that's not how this happened at all.
I
I did
love the
not break my
picture of
bra.
it though.
Wasn't that a good? I mean, I kicked that door down and it was flaming. Like, that's what people think. And I'm like, no. It was like 2, 3 years in. And I'm like, okay, we got some work to do here. And then when I was, so the board is then there's an executive committee. So it's like 10 governors that kind of steer the direction. They'd never had a woman on it. And I'm like, this is fucking bullshit. So I ran. You have to like throw your hat in the ring. I get turned down twice. No great reason other than this. I don't own the team. So, because we're privately owned, but not by Tony Will. Right. And so I'm like, and some of the, I'm like, okay, whatever. So finally I just said, well, instead of just trying to be on the executive committee, I'll just run for chairperson of the board because they've never had a woman in that position either. And they still haven't. And as you know, I've been standing at the bottom of that mountain and I will be climbing that eventually, but it's there's politicking involved, and which is fine. But so I said, well, I'll run for chairman of the board, and I lost, which I knew I would, and that's okay, right? There's the courage thing. And but then I got a phone call from the chairman now, and he said, this was 3 years ago, and he said, Tony, I would love for you to be on the executive committee. So I finally broke that glass ceiling, but it was not straightforward. Okay, so along the way, it's been like, so the female space, I'm a minority there, and over the course of that time frame, I stopped drinking in the mix of all of that. And so that helped, right? That really helped in terms of the courage standpoint. But along the way, leadership pillar number three became very important, which is make mistakes. And here's why I love mistakes. And I say this to my staff all the time. We learn from them way faster than our successes. When we come out of the gate, when we do it right the first time, it's like, kind of like, how did I do that? Right? Like, how did I do this? Right? To the oversimplification or overthinking. And so I love making mistakes. So in the drinking world, right? In our world, we call those data points. And it's not a mistake, it's just a learning opportunity, right? And it's the same thing. I could tell you how many mistakes I've made. Like, I couldn't tell you because there's been so many. There's been times where I'm like, I order things. Quantities are really hard for me. I'm a very optimistic person. I order way too many of things, and then I date them. And so like, it only be like used for one beer. I'm like, take this responsibility away from me. Like, I just set money on fire. Like, and that's a funny one, but I've made other mistakes, right, that are much more serious. Or, and I'm in the, you know, I talk to the media a lot, and I do all these things, and it's like, I have to, and I swear a lot, so I have to be careful about things like that. And
Not here, thankfully.
yeah, I was like letting it rip. I'm like, I love this. So I make mistakes as number three. And I just had this conversation with my team the other day, and I said, it's okay. We need to make the mistakes in order to be better. It's totally okay. Please do not feel shame for this, right? So shame is always mashed up in all this, and I'm trying to be anti-shame. So that's number three. Number four, I talk about my team. And we work a lot of hours. They're weird hours because we're in the sports and entertainment business. And so we work weekends, we work holidays, we work, you know, it just depends. Because hockey season runs in this, so we start in October, and then we go for regular season through April, and we play 72 games. So 36 at home, 36 on the road. And then if we go into postseason, that's another, could be up to 8 weeks. So our season is really long. And the busiest time for us isn't actually when we're playing games, it's our off season. Because people are like, what do you do in the off season? Do you just hang around at home? The off season's actually busier because we're planning and prepping for next season. So my team is a big, we're like family. Culture is really important to me, the culture that I create in the front office. And so leadership pillar number four is macro manage. And by like, do you guys like to be micromanaged at all? Does
Not
anyone?
that terrible. Ellie's terrible for it.
Shit. God, I do. Well, there's a story I could tell you, but I won't tell it here. We'll talk about it afterwards about being micromanaged and my reaction to that. Ooh.
Right. That's about my reaction. Like, if you want to see me react and not respond. And so I'm a big fan of macro managing, where I'm like, I hire you to be you, right? Like, I want you to be authentic. I trust you until you show prove me otherwise, which has happened. You know, I've been there almost 10 years. It's happened. But I want every person on my team to be that individual that they are, right? And there's no right or wrong way to go about selling tickets or creating a marketing strategy. And a lot of what we do is collaborative, but I want everyone to be authentic to who they are. And I don't want them to feel like they have to come to work and be one version and then go home and be another version. Because I've done that, right? I spent my career like the tale of two Tonys or whatever. So I've worked really hard at that, and macro managing. And that can be applied really beyond just people, but like the whole, my day-to-day job, like. And I have to catch myself getting into the weeds sometimes and saying, okay, Tony, pull back. You don't need to be so detailed about X, Y, and Z. So that's leadership pillar number four. And really, that applies in my alcohol free living too, because I'm sure, I know I went through the stage, I don't know if you guys did, where I was holding on to it so tightly. Like, Right? Like if I got to do the next thing just right, because if I don't, maybe I'll drink. And that really boils down to self-trust.
Yeah,
Right?
absolutely.
And
Yeah, sorry.
so.
I was going to say, like, the way I often talk about it is zooming out, right? Because I think it's so easy to get caught in that thing that we did that day and the whole world and everything's collapsing. And the moment we zoom out and kind of get some perspective, things look different, right? I love this. This is super cool how applicable this is, right? Across these different worlds. That's really cool.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, and by when I started to trust myself again, it's not like, because I get asked this a lot when I was coaching on the path or when I coach my clients now. It's like, well, how did you know to not hold on to it so tightly? And I'm like, well, to bring it down to its simplest terms is repetition, repetition, repetition. You know, going and living my life, not changing where I'm going or what I'm doing, but just living my life, but doing it alcohol free, although it was wildly uncomfortable at times, because we were doing, you know, I was doing that identity shift because everyone knew me as Tony Party Time, right? And my friends gave me that nickname and I hated it. Like secretly, I'd be like, oh, it's so cute and funny, haha. But it made me feel, I felt a lot of shame in it because I didn't like my relationship with alcohol and I didn't know how to go about doing it. So I didn't have the courage yet. I didn't know how to change identities. And I, quite frankly, I didn't know that it was okay. Right? It's okay to change. Again, that sounds like, well, duh, but it doesn't feel that way at certain stages of my life. It just didn't.
It's all made up,
So.
right? But it doesn't feel like it's all made up. And the thing is that badger, like I can remember in my early 20s, my thing was being able to take more drugs and drink more than people. But it's an empty bucket and it fucks you up. And it took me a while to realize that, right? But it's hard, it's to let that go. I was like, oh shit, like this is the thing that I do. This is who I am. But it's not, it isn't an identity and it's an experience. But for as long as we believe it's an identity, it will feel like one, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, if Tony Party Time isn't at this get together, no one's gonna have fun. Right? Like, who am I to think that I am that important? You're fun. Like,
Party's
what
on
bullshit is
me.
that?
The party is literally on me. Exactly.
I'm like, I mean, when I look back and think about some of these beliefs I had, I'm like, Tony, you are such a shit show. Like I just have to laugh, but through the laughter, I know I'm, you know, I've healed, right? And I can look back truly, and I have so much empathy for anyone in that space because, oh my God, I get it. I get it. And I was the classic, oh, you don't drink, I don't trust you, girl. Right? Like that was me. And I'm not proud of that, but that's who I was. And and now I'm like, well, if people don't trust me, that's like that's not a Tony thing, that's them, right? Because I know that's what it was about, my relationship with alcohol.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, so that's the first four pillars. So we got two left. Number five, it speaks to what I've touched on a little bit already, but I label it as ask for forgiveness rather than permission. And essentially this just speaks to my rebel
Me
personality.
too. I fucking love this.
It's a lot better.
There's a bunch of stuff I've done recently, and thinking of some stuff that we're doing in Tampa. I'm just like, let's just fucking do it, and then we'll seek forgiveness later. It'll be fine.
Like when we borrowed the other
Oh yeah,
B&B
the photography thing.
garden. We're like, oh, we'll just take their garden. It's lovely. We'll just get our photos taken. They won't mind. We'll ask for forgiveness.
That's exactly what I that's how I'm like, well, you know, like it could be little things too. Like on Friday, I was so tired. I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna show up when I show up. And not that anyone, not like Annie's gonna be like, Tony, you're later, you know. But I just needed some time because I was tired and whatever. And so I show up late and I left early, you know, and that's okay. Like that's just what I needed. And so it could be small things like that, or it could be big things. Like, I mean, I did some sales campaigns for the hockey team. And that were what we call loss leaders. Like we were losing money on it. And I knew we were losing money on it, but I knew the payoff, the long-term payoff, we would make a profit. And I got them sponsored. Like it was a big thing. And we still do that same sales campaign that I started years ago, but the finance people hate me. They hated me. And that's okay. That's all right. I'm like, hate me now, love me later. That was one of my When I used to teach group fitness, and I was a personal trainer, like as a hobby. And I'd say, "Hate me now, love me later," because the payoff comes later, right? And so, yeah, there's just a lot of things where my rebel personality shines through, and I've been able to tap into that on my alcohol journey. Like, and it's not been easy. Like at day 80, when I stopped drinking, I was like, if I am going to launch a coaching business, I'm going to have to talk about this. Like, I can't launch a coaching business quietly if I'm going to be successful, right? No one has ever not marketed and had a successful business.
Isn't it funny how we all want to do that? It's like, oh, I'll just quietly over
We'll
here and I'll be.
just let them come, build it, and they will come. Exactly.
Yes, they will know that that's what Tony Will is doing, right? They're not gonna fucking know. So I was like, I gotta tell it. So my way of doing it was just to put it on social media. But the beautiful thing is, I can frame it the way I want. I don't have to say, like, I don't have to tell every nitty-gritty detail. But I was terrified because my job is public facing, and I was like, what are people going to think? Like the shame and the stigma and all this. But I just said, fuck it. And that's been kind of a core theme. It's not a leadership pillar, although maybe I should add it as one. This is the fuck it one, but I just did it. And I was worried about a lot of things. I'm like, am I setting my career on fire? Am I setting a lot of things on fire? But I knew if I didn't close that loophole, that I would crawl through it. And I am a big fan of closing loopholes for me, because it was an insurance policy. If I put it on social media, then I, because the first time I stopped drinking, I didn't do that. But this time I'm like, no, I'm doing it. And so I did it. And each time I've done it, and now I'm to the point where I just don't care, because my identity's changed. I know that, the sky isn't falling and that the stigma's bullshit. And I'm really out there doing this and talking about it to help be part of the reason why the stigma can be lessened, right? Because there's varying degrees of alcohol use disorder, or just being a gray area drinker, right? And I could drink once a week and have a problem with my relationship with alcohol, or I
Absolutely.
could drink the way I drink and have a problem with my relationship with alcohol. So it doesn't, our culture is just so screwed up in so many ways, but I'm working on straightening it out the best I can.
I'm with you.
So yeah, asking for forgiveness rather than permission. And that's what I've done on both sides, and using it with the K-Wings and then in my alcohol-free journey.
I love that. It sounds like, I don't know a huge amount about pro sport, but it seems like the amount of time that managers or anybody gets in order to try and enact change is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So the courage to do what you did, I think, is really powerful. And those things that we know that if we, it's like any investment, right? There's a lag. And then the dividends don't come until later. And there's this element of trust and courage. And yeah, I think a lot of people. Booze is one of those scenarios, right? It's where very often we're in the middle of this sticky bit. It's hard, it's difficult, it's challenging, and we can't really see out, but there's that thing in it, our heart, that's like, keep going, keep going. There's gold here, there's gold here. And just trusting that. Sometimes it's just hearing other people that we can just tell they're telling the truth. For one thing that was true for me was I could hear all these people, and I was like, I know Annie's telling the truth. I know Scott's, I know all these people that I'm listening to, I can sense they're not bullshitting me. Even though there's a part of me that wants to call bullshit on it, I'm going to crack on. And I'm so glad I did that, as that leap of faith is massive.
Oh, one of the best things I did, because I almost pulled out of the certification. Like, we talked off air about the financial commitment to this, right? And that's just certification. It's not even to launching the business, because there's additional finances that it costs money to launch a business, everyone, in case you don't
Oh
know.
no, we found that too.
Oh no. And you have to market it? What? And so I almost pulled out. But what's funny is, and this is where trusting ourselves and, not like, if we don't want to speak up, that's when we should. That's when what I tell myself, like, if I'm like, well, this is uncomfortable, then I do it. Even though it's uncomfortable, because there's gold there, like you said, Sam. And so I called my finance person that handles my retirement and all that. And I said to her, I want to do this certification. I want to launch a business. And she's like, launch a business? You already have a job. I'm like, I know, but I want to, anyways. And there was shame in that, right? Like, trying to explain what I'm wanting to do. And I said, here's how much money I'm looking for. I said, I don't really want to pull it out of my retirement, but do I have, like, I was looking for some mystical pot of gold that I didn't know about, like some leprechaun dropped it off. And she's like, Tony, you would not believe. I had the exact amount of money in a rollover Roth IRA. So I'd already paid taxes on it and everything, that exact amount of money. And I was like, I have to. And so I cracked on and I did it. And it's in the top three best things I've ever chosen to do in my life. That was really hard. But it's up there. I'm so glad I did it. So my sixth leadership pillar, this is the best one, is, and the easiest, is to have fun.
Oh, I love it.
Is to have fun. Because, okay, let's go to alcohol first on this. It's a serious topic, right? It is. And we get all serious and analogy and weighted down and our stories, right? But the reality is, it is so much more fun being alcohol free. And my number one reason to drink, when I made my list, why I drink, why I don't want to drink, when I did the alcohol experiment, I read the book and all this, the number one reason was to have fun. I have so much more fun not drinking than, and that belief was so deep rooted in me. It took a long time, right? To in the reps, living my life over, and am I boring now that I don't drink? Like going through all, but I had to go through the reps, and yeah, it wasn't fun and it didn't happen overnight for me, but I did it. And I've met the best people all over the world. I never had friends in the UK before, right? Where I'm sending hockey stuff to. I said to my assistant, I'm like, I don't know how you mail this overseas, but I'm sure you'll figure it out. But these are two of my friends in the UK. Can you send this?
So excited.
And she's like, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, cool, because I don't know. And so she's got I wrote down specific notes for things I wanted for each one of you. And so it's just like, how cool is that? Like, how much fun is this? So, and then in the sports world, it kind of seems more natural, right? Like, it's sports, it's fun. But when you work behind the scenes in sports, I can tell you it is not fun. It's not as sexy. I mean, because of the culture I've built and I'm so passionate about, we have so much fun. But it starts with the culture and hiring the right people and all of that. And then it becomes fun because, like I said, we work long hours, and we don't take ourselves too seriously. Right. And it's okay, just like I said, to be our authentic selves and make mistakes and, let's laugh about it. So, it's really important to have fun, especially an adult. Like, we're all in that, probably say I'm in the sandwich generation. I'm raising my kids and my parents are aging. And so it can be really easy to just be like, this sucks. But no, let's have fun. So that's number six.
Very cool. We've had a number of people who I just you just sense how free they are, and the central piece for pretty much everybody is fun and play,
Yeah.
is a big, big bit. Right. So not to put too much pressure on you then, mate, but what are the six? Could you go through them
Yeah.
again?
Yeah. Go to the experts, innovate, make mistakes, ask for forgiveness rather than permission, macromanage, and have fun. And
Freaking
really, the first two, you would do in order. The rest of them, you can mix them up because you don't have to do them in that. I mean, you could go to the experts and innovate, and then you could have fun, and then you can make a mistake, and then, like,
I just love the fact that your rebellious nature is like, yeah, you just got to like mix the last ones up. Like you have a little bit of order, but then not too much. Thanks very
yeah,
much.
that's I think that, Ellie, that's so observant of you, because that's basically it is. I'm a little bit of order, and then a lot of them, just figure it out. So yeah, so that's, and we've won some really cool awards this year at the Kalamazoo Wings. We won a huge award right before I came to Tampa for we won Sales, Advertising, Marketing, Management Idea of the Year award. That's
Okay, now that's the title in it. Whoa.
I know, it's Sammy for short, Sammy, but we won it. We were up against an NFL team, an NBA team, and then two advertising agencies that produced Super Bowl ads for Staples and PetSmart. And I had to pitch it in front of 1,000 people on stage. And it was voted on by a panel of judges, by attendees at the, it's at the National Sports Forum. And we won.
Good for that. Congratulations.
How we won, what I presented on was diversity, equity, inclusion, I called it inclusive spirit, and what we do at the Kalamazoo Wings for inclusivity. And so there's a series of games that we put on. Like this year we did a deaf awareness game. We've done coats for floats where for socioeconomic in terms of coats being donated and then given to those individuals that may not have winter coats. We do a Black Heritage game to celebrate Black excellence. We do hockey for her. And then my favorite one, and I get asked about this quite often, is rainbow ice. We are known for dyeing the ice. We do 5 games a year. And I always wanted to dye the ice rainbow. And my ice guy called me one day. This was back in 2020 when we were dark. And he says, "You want me to do what?" I said, "I want you to dye the ice rainbow." And he goes, "Okay, what?" So we walked through it. And this was groundbreaking because no one had ever done it. And I knew it was going to be very controversial. Ask for forgiveness rather than permission. And so we connected it with the NHL's initiative for Hockey's for Everyone. And the rainbow, yes, is synonymous with LGBTQ+, and that is part of it. But it's really about all things. It's about race, gender, socioeconomic, religion, the list goes on, disability. And so we launched that game in 2021. I think we broke the internet, and we've done it every year since. And it is something I'm immensely proud of. And again, I apply those leadership pillars. Now, the Las Vegas Knights, they did ice mapping to do the ice rainbow. And what that means is they use lights. And I'm like, that does not count. We dye the fucking ice.
I love it. And now your rink manager or whatever he's called, he's the world's leading expert in dyeing ice rinks as rainbows, right?
He is. He was on the news. He had all kinds of interviews in media because they were like, who is the guy? And he got so much coverage because they were like, and they have to hand spray it. And so, and they have to be able to play on it 3 periods, 60 minutes of hockey. And so my poor players, I was like, listen, guys, I am so sorry. They're like, no, this is great. We support the cause. And we wear rainbow jerseys. We use hockey tape that's rainbow. We the goalposts, we put rainbow around the, like, we really, when we support any cause or initiative, we are all in. This isn't tokenism. So I'm doing work on the alcohol-free side, bringing NA beverages to arenas or our arena specifically, looking for like Heineken Zero as a sponsor, things as a sponsor in that space. And because we don't check boxes, we truly mean it. And so there's just more things I'm working on.
That is great. So cool. I feel like there's so, but like, I have no doubt we'd be able to have you back on for another conversation, mate, because there's so many different kind of routes we could go down with this chat, I think.
Absolutely. I would love to come back on. And I need to say this out loud, because as I do more interviews, if I say this out loud, that means I'm going to do it, which isn't just come back on the podcast, but well, I want to join the ranks of so many awesome people that have written books, and I've had a couple rolling around in my head. So I'm going to start writing my book this year, the first one, and I'm naming it The Tale of 4 Tonys.
Love it.
Now, I'll tell you, my husband says, why are you naming it that? Because you have 4 personalities. I said, no, smartass. I said, just think about it. Like, I've been married 3 times. So if you go with my maiden name and then my 3 married names, there's 4 mm-hmm. Tonys. And so, mm-hmm. but it blends beautifully into changing my identity into one that is alcohol free. So
I know we'd just love to have you on when things are flowing and rolling with that, for sure. And
might be a couple years.
You're going to love it. I've been writing the book for a while now. I think by the end of the year, it should be out, but it's a process. It's really good fun. So
what's your book about?
It's called Rebel Spirituality. So it's going to be, spiritual shit basically, but trying to strip it more less incense, more common sense, maybe, is a good way of thinking about
Ellie, are you writing a book?
It's not the title, but I have thought about it. That's a good, like, it's a good vibe for it. But yeah, no, Ellie, we need to get Ellie writing a book now as well, don't we?
Yeah, Ellie.
You've got the time somewhere around those kids, Ellie. You can fit it in, surely.
Well, not if I'm putting myself on Tinder or somebody who's trying to get me on Hinge the other day.
I was on Hinge too.
Well, I've heard good things about Hinge.
I had some
Well,
dates.
you never know. But then my whole thing with it is, I literally don't know where I would fit it in. Like it seems like there might be a lot of administration of this kind of stuff, back and forth and what have you.
You need a PA. You need a PA for your online dating as well.
Dating peer.
Yeah, I like said I played with it a little bit and I set it up, and then one Friday night, like my kids were with my ex and I didn't have a hockey game, and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna go live. Fuck it. And I did. And there came Josh and I had a date with him, and the rest is history.
Love it.
Wow.
I know.
Oh.
I'll warn you, mine was really fast. Josh was on Tinder off and on for 15 years and it took it. So,
Oh,
there's
God.
varying degrees.
Yeah. Right. Before we get lost in a Tinder hole, Tony, I know that people will be really interested in looking into both your professional stuff and the personal stuff. And I know you do coaching for people around alcohol. So tell us about that and links and where people can find you.
So you can find Mindfulness Elevated is the name of my coaching business. And I listen, I can talk. I got the gift of gab, but I just want to say mindfulness is a huge part of my journey, and then elevating it, right? Taking it to the next level. I stopped drinking for me. So when you take the first two initials of Mindfulness Elevated, it's me. And that's
Nice.
why I named the business Mindfulness Elevated. I'm very intentional around that. So mindfulnesselevated.com. I coach in three areas. I coach in substance reduction or removal, because I believe in celebrating even reducing drinking. I think that gets missed a lot. It's not a black or white issue. And then I coach on fitness and nutrition because I have a vast background in fitness and nutrition. I used to be Tubby Tony. There's a whole blog on that about when I was Tubby Tony back 20 years ago. And then I became an Iron Man. And then I also coach on professional development. So because I have 25 years in my career and helping people feel get unstuck or find what they're passionate for, move on, have the courage to move into some different spaces in their career or launch their own business or whatever they want to do. So I coach in all three of those areas, and I have different workshops depending on what my calendar looks like around goal setting, around habits and things of that nature. And then if anyone's interested in just checking out the hockey team, it's kwings.com. And there's a lot, our hockey season's slow. Well, I think we're going to go to playoffs. Yay. So we're winding down the regular season right now. So that's where you can find me, or at I'm Tony Will on Instagram as well. So yeah.
You're going to take us to a game when we get out there in our van?
I would love to bring you guys to the game. And if we could make it happen in January, which is not the greatest month to be in Michigan, but you could come to Rainbow Ice. How cool would that be?
I would love to come to Rainbow Ice. And have you got any nice single
Oh,
hockey
I do.
matches?
Oh, I do. I mean, I'm around men. Ellie, you need to come over to the States.
I think you two need to take this off podcast and have your chat behind the scenes.
I know. Yes, we'll take it offline.
Me up
And
with
they would,
some nice
I mean,
hockey players.
oh yeah. Now the hockey players are a little young, but hey, if you want to skew that way,
Yes. Can get away with it, you know.
perhaps.
Right, on that bombshell. Thanks for coming on, Tony. It's been a blast. It's really good fun.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. This has been awesome. And I can't wait to read your book, Sam. And Ellie, when you start dating, call me and I'll help you.
Wait, right.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Bye, guys.